If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, and welcome to Into the Night, a Five Nights at Freddy's podcast. I am your host, Nick, and thank you so much for listening. If there is one aspect to the Five Nights at Freddy's universe that remains deeply misunderstood, it would likely be Remnant and Agony. Depending on who you engage with, these two elements are either seen as critical components fundamental to the narrative, or they're dismissed as inconsequential, logical missteps adding nothing but confusion to the broader story. The truth, as it often is, lies somewhere in between. There is nuance here, and it's this nuance that makes understanding Remnant and Agony essential for most meaningful engagements with the lore of Five Nights at Freddy's. They are not arbitrary or unnecessary additions. Rather, they serve a significant role in the world-building of the series. By attempting to establish a framework, rules, if you will, governing the supernatural elements of the story, they provide a structure that is pivotal for comprehending how the unexplainable functions within this universe. Now, the very idea of rules for the supernatural likely raise some eyebrows. By definition, isn't the supernatural something abstract, something unbound by any kind of formal structure? Well, potentially yes. But as with much of life, the answer depends on the framework we're working within, i.e., how Scott Cawthon wishes to express and define the supernatural in his art. Over the years, as the FNAF lore has expanded, the supernatural elements have evolved from something relatively straightforward, spirits possessing machines to exact their revenge, into a far more intricate rule-bound system, allowing the supernatural to maintain its place within the narrative. What I'm suggesting here is that while spirit possession, as a mean for prolonging existence, might no longer be at the core of the modern FNAF lore, obligatory comment to note the exception for Glamrock Freddy being Michael Afton, the foundational ideas remain relevant, and their influence continues to be felt throughout the story. This attempt to impose structure on the preternatural forces began as early as the Silver Eyes novel trilogy, specifically the final entry, The Fourth Closet. We could, of course, discuss at length how that trilogy didn't quite pan out the way it was initially envisioned, and how, ironically, the focus on exploring Remnant and Agony might have inadvertently distracted the narrative from its original purpose it was trying to be. But that doesn't diminish the import of these concepts. In fact, Remnant and Agony play an explicit role in both the Silver Eyes trilogy and the Fazbear Fright series right after, and their influence even extends directly to the manifestation of the franchise's current major antagonist, the Mimic. These concepts then are worth taking time to define clearly, because they are now integral to understanding the world of FNAF, and not on the surface level. If you just wish to understand the bare story of FNAF, you don't need to know these concepts. But if you want to do any deeper meta-narrative debates, understanding what these forces represent within the broader narrative is an important discussion to have. Which brings us to the goal of tonight's episode: to explore every aspect of Remnant and Agony in detail. Initially, I had intended to cover the full breadth of paranormal phenomenon within the series. Ghosts, the demons of agony, even the unique phenomenon of Michael Apted becoming a revenant. But before we dive into those specifics, I think we need to first establish some fundamental rules for the foundational elements that gave rise to these abstract forces. Forces that torment William Apted's victims, the citizens of Hurricane Utah, or, on rare occasions, act as guardians and saviors of light when the world seems its most hopeless. This is everything you need to know about Remnant and Agony.
While you're waiting for more fun to arrive, why not try out Remnant Collection?
Remnant can be understood as a mysterious substance or essence deeply connected to memories, emotions, and life force. For lack of a better term, think of it as soul energy. But more specifically, it's positive soul energy, the potency and power of which are tied to the human spirit and the emotions that arise from it. It is a manifestation of the essence of life, shaped by positive emotions. Remnant can take on multiple forms. In the books and implied in the games, it is often depicted as a viscous liquid resembling silver liquid mercury in both color and consistency, respectively. However, we also see a more ethereal manifestation in the FNAF AR app, though likely non-canon, where Remnant is shown as a luminous gaseous substance that can be collected in some manner, further expanding its potential forms. Now let's turn to Agony, which exists as a counterpart to Remnant. Agony is a supernatural energy or essence that is born from intense negative emotions, particularly those tied to tragic or violent events. Unlike Remnant, which is tied to positive energy, Agony arises from the residue of human suffering and despair, those lingering, overwhelming feelings that remain long after the physical event has passed. Agony transforms the remnants of human suffering into a potent, corrupting force. It bridges the gap between emotional trauma and physical reality, and imbues objects or beings with the new, often destructive properties. While it's typically intangible, Agony has been seen to have potential to manifest into physical form, most notably as an ebony black oil-like liquid that corrupts anything it comes into contact with. So where do Remnant and Agony come from? The answer is deceptively simple. They come from all of us. Every living being, through the release of emotions, elicit both Remnant and Agony as a byproduct. This principle is akin to the alchemical concept of equivalent exchange. In order for something to be created, there must be an equal amount of energy, effort, or sacrifice made in return. Or perhaps more accurately, like the conservation of matter, where matter and energy cannot be destroyed, only transformed. That same can be said for Remnant and Agony. These supernatural forces operate on this fundamental principle. Every time we experience an emotion, our soul expends energy. The nature of that energy, whether it be Remnant or Agony, is determined by the emotional experience. Positive emotions release Remnant, while negative emotions produce Agony. In the FNAF universe, this constant exchange of soul energy occurs all around us, completely unnoticed. The people in that universe are unaware of it because, much like the air we breathe, this energy is invisible to the naked eye. As noted in the FNAF novellas, like Alone Together, while the reference there is made more particularly to spirits, the same principle applies to Remnant and Agony. Very few humans have developed the ability to perceive these abstract forces when they are minimal. In essence, humans do not see them, because they exist beyond our normal perceptions. Only those with heightened senses, or more often, other supernatural entities, can truly witness the manifestation of these energies at play. However, even though humans cannot see them, we can still feel them. This often happens when remnant or agony reaches a sufficient potency in the surrounding environment. Because these energies can cling to objects and locations, they leave behind a mark on reality, an imprint that affects us. Even in the absence of a direct emotional experience, our souls are capable of sensing this residual energy and translating it into an emotional response. The best way to think of it is, think of it as the process of attending a concert. When the music plays and the lyrics and melody flow through thousands of people, everyone starts to feel alive, jumping up and down, caught up in the energy of the event. As the crowd reacts to the performance, they released a vast amount of remnant as a natural byproduct of their emotions overflowing. This collective remnant soon spreads, affecting all those around them, increasing the joy, excitement, and inspiration of everyone present. In turn, this also heightens the emotional energy caused by the band playing music, making the power of their melody even stronger, thus even more remnant to be released by the audience, creating a self-perpetuating cycle. The more everyone feeds off each other's energy, the more intense the effect becomes. This dynamic then lingers even after the end of the night. People may feel euphoric or invigorated, despite jumping and dancing for hours, without immediately noticing their sore legs or how much they ate or drank. The power of remnant masks the weariness of the body, instead energizing individuals beyond the logical limits of physical exhaustion. On the flip side, the same emotional equation applies to more somber occasions, such as a funeral. The pain of loss, regret, and sadness all trigger the release of agony. Just as in a concert, when multiple people begin to feel this intense emotion around each other, this emotion will inevitably resonate. They will release agony and amplify the sorrow of the group collectively. This shared emotional experience feeds back into itself, escalating the collective sense of grief and deepening the suffering of those present. The agony becomes a tangible force, growing as each person contributes to it, much like the remnant at the concert. But even after the people who experience these emotions and release their soul energy have left the area, the lingering energy does not vanish. As with all energy, it cannot be destroyed, only transformed. So even after a funeral procession has concluded and those who attended return to their daily lives, the soul energy they expended remains. It permeates the surroundings, clinging to the air like a heavy fog, much like how, after a concert, you can still feel the electric energy of the performance energizing your steps. The sorrow of death can linger in a place such as a graveyard. It's how FNAF would explain why you don't need signs to remind you to be quiet and respectful when in a cemetery. The atmosphere itself around that area carries an unmistakable, almost preternatural, weight of solemnity. But these are merely the everyday applications of remnant and agony, the experiences that the average person in the FNAF universe might encounter. The true extremes of these energies are where the supernatural elements of the series come into play. We see Remnant acting as a vehicle for spirits to possess machines, as with the MCI victims, and we witness Agony materializing, taking on physical form as it feeds off the collective suffering of an event, like the creation of the Yellow Rabbit. And in even more extreme circumstances, we see entities manipulating the very fabric of reality. Michael Apted, for example, is able to repossess his own corpse, maintain his sanity and sense of self, while Golden Freddy can teleport, induce hallucinations, and even break minds. When soul energy accumulates to the point of potency, it begins to leave not just a stain on the world that our souls can feel, but a scar on reality itself, which can take on a physical form. This typically occurs when emotions are at their most extreme, when suffering reaches its most abhorrent, such as a parent forced to endure the death of their child, or a child trapped in endless torturous nightmares. And conversely, this can also happen when bliss reaches its most paradisical, such as a child feeling loved and safe on their birthday, or the act of self-sacrifice to save a loved one from harm. At these extreme emotional points, remnant and agony begin to truly manifest in the FNAF world, reshaping the very fabric of reality. However, that's not totally accurate, because this is not exactly a breach of reality itself. These energies, while immaterial, still operate within the bounds of the physical world, but they exist on the periphery, beyond the natural laws that we understand, allowing them to create and cause phenomena that appear unnatural, uncanny, and defy our normal explanation. And these manifestations can range from the minor to the major. In subtle instances, remnant and agony might cause objects or images to shift or transform. Pictures on the walls of Freddy Fazbear's Pizzeria, for instance, might change from cheerful photos of the animatronics to newspaper articles chronicling the tragic deaths at Freddy's, or children's portraits might show tear-streaked faces in the place of their usual smiles. In more significant examples, the energies take on a tangible, almost sentient form, such as the shadow animatronics like Shadow Bonnie, which are born directly from agony, taking not just a physical form, but perhaps a semblance of will. Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now that we have established what remnant and agony are in terms of their manifestations, let us explore how they influence or operate in the world. We'll begin with the positive side of the coin, remnant. Remnant plays a crucial role in the supernatural landscape of the Five Nights at Freddy's universe, particularly in its connection to the original game narrative. It is the key element that William Afton sought to understand and abuse, specifically once he learned it from the deaths of Charlotte and Elizabeth. As discussed earlier, remnant is an emotional energy released by the soul when experiencing happiness, joy, and love. This energy can stem from the present moment of bliss, or from a nostalgic sorrow as one recalls cherished memories, or the presence of a loved one who is no longer around to make new memories with. It is, in essence, the lingering emotional essence, the memories and feelings that remain long after the soul has departed from the physical world. Remnant can manifest in visible forms. As said before, it can come about as a gaseous substance, or in its more iconic liquid-like silver mercury appearance. And it is the very manifestation of remnant that allows for reality-bending phenomena to occur. The energy released by positive emotions can stretch the boundaries of normal reality, creating supernatural effects that should not be possible within the confines of the physical world. Remnant's most common association is with possession. When a human dies and their soul no longer has a physical vessel, the soul typically moves on to its intended destination, be it heaven or hell. However, in the case of remnant, the energy created by intense emotions has the ability to cause the soul to linger, preventing the natural process of passing on. The most infamous example of this is Michael Afton, whose soul was able to remain tethered to existence after his death. This occurred when he was injected with Remnant following his scooping. This energy allowed Michael to repossess his own dead body, keeping his soul from passing on in the typical manner. However, Michael's case is an extreme outlier. In fact, the first instances of possession in the main game series were not as dramatic as Michael's. Charlotte Emily and Elizabeth Afton both possessed objects of deep emotional connection to them, the puppet and circus baby, respectively. The remnant embedded within these creations allowed them to act as vessels for the souls of their creator's daughters. In a way, these robots were not just machines, but reflections of the bonds between the fathers and their children, vessels infused with the emotional essence of remnant, making possession possible to those specific souls.
It's in your nature to protect the innocent.
She's so pretty and shiny. Didn't you make her just for me?
Another key distinction between remnant and agony lies in their effects on the physical world, and how remnant can preserve or even restore things, while agony tends to be associated with decay and suffering. Remnant has a restorative quality that can bring life to what is broken or stagnant. Remnant possesses the ability to repair or rejuvenate, even resurrecting things that should have been lost forever. An example of this is seen in the character of Dr. Talbert from the Stitch Race Stingers. Talbert was a scientist who first studied Remnant driven by a deeply personal motive, his daughter, Renelle, who had been gravely ill. In an attempt to preserve the good memories and keep her close to him, he created a heart-shaped pendant made entirely of the substance of Remnant. And remarkably, after giving the pendant to Renelle as a gift, she recovered from her illness, suggesting that Remnant had the ability to heal beyond the realm of ordinary medical science. This principle is evident in Michael Afton's case, where Remnant injected into his body allowed him to survive in his decaying, hollowed-out corpse. This not only defies the laws of life and death as we understand it, but further, it could suggest that Michael may have even experienced a form of grand healing. And this enters more speculative territory, but the fact that Michael appears to be capable of experiencing sensory phenomena like hallucinations in FNAF 1 and 3, especially in FNAF 3 where it's implied it's because of the faulty ventilation, so despite his lungs having been removed during the scooping, does that not suggest that maybe he somehow regenerated some parts of himself during his time during his second life? Similarly, Remnant can grant mobility and functionality to objects that should otherwise be inanimate or incapable of movement. A striking example of this is Molten Freddy, a construct fueled by the remnant of the missing children's incident victims. Despite being nothing more than a tangled mass of wires, Molten Freddy is able to move with precision, stand upright, it even form opposable fingers. This blatantly defies physics and highlights the supernatural properties Remnant can dispense. Another example is the Mangle, whose chaotic construction seems to disregard physical limitations of its fragmented body. In fact, in the emails from FNAF AR, engineers that built the Mangle replica expressed baffle over Mangle's apparent reported ability to climb walls and maneuver in ways that should be structurally impossible. Interestingly, these extraordinary capabilities often go unnoticed when associated with positive events or emotions. Remnant tends to work quietly, creating beauty or functionality without drawing attention to the supernatural forces at play. By contrast, negative manifestations, such as those tied to agony, are far more pronounced and impactful to our perception, making them harder to ignore. This discrepancy may explain why the magical aspects of Remnant often remain overlooked, even as they subtly reshape reality in very profound ways. This brings us, of course, to Agony. As the polar opposite of Remnant, Agony influences the world in a reflective yet distinctive manner. While Remnant is released from the soul during moments of happiness, love, and joy, Agony emerges from suffering. Emotions such as loss, tragedy, sorrow, neglect, pain, torment, nihilism, and depression are all catalysts for the release of agony from the human soul. However, agony, like Remnant, is not entirely one-dimensional. Just as Remnant can transform into a painful recollection of something positive, agony can manifest as a negative memory that inspires growth or positive outcomes. For example, memories of trials and tribulations, times of immense suffering that have been overcome, can lead to the creation of brighter futures. But unlike Remnant, which acts as an adhesive for souls to find new vessels after their original form expires, agony serves a different purpose. It acts as an amplifier for supernatural powers. Think of it as a bonfire. The soul is the spark of life, the flame that burns and dances, while the vessel, the human body, is the wood that sustains the flame. Remnant serves as kindling, nurturing the spark into a roaring fire. But by contrast, agony is akin to pouring gasoline on the fire, dangerously amplifying its intensity and causing it to burn uncontrollably, often harming its surroundings in the process. Agony has the potential to ignite a wildfire of emotions, conjuring malevolent forces, often referred to as spirits of agony by the FNAF fanbase. However, I believe the term creatures of agony to be more fitting, as these manifestations embody the chaotic, destructive nature of agony, because many antagonists in the Fazbear Fright series can be classified as creatures of agony. Examples include the Plush Trap Chaser, Ella the Doll, and even Foxy the Pirate. When infected by agony, these objects gain a facsimile of sentience, not fully comparable to human consciousness, but more akin to an animal instinct or the preternatural forces of nature. The extent of their reality-altering abilities also varies. For instance, the Plush Trap Chaser exhibits heightened speed and strength, while other manifestations, like Foxy, can warp reality itself to limited degrees. Even the new big bad of the FNAF universe, the Mimic, is an animatronic deeply infused with agony. Its creation stems from the grief and rage of its creator, Edward Murray, who lashed out emotionally following the loss of his son. And while the Mimic was designed as a machine to imitate behavior, it's Edwin's agony fused into it that's shaping its darker, more malicious instincts. This is evident in Tiger Rock and Nexi, where the Mimic assumes sadistic and more manipulative personas. These behaviors are notably more cognizant compared to the Mimic's portrayal in, say, Ruin or Both Help Wanted games and its associated novellas, The Mimic and The Storyteller. Another fascinating distinction between Agony and Remnant also lies in their ability to create. While Remnant can inhabit and preserve objects or human bodies, Agony appears capable of conjuring entirely independent beings made purely of its essence. These creatures are not pre-existing objects infused with emotions, but rather manifestations born from the ether itself. Examples of such entities include the Yellow Rabbit from Into the Pit and the Shadow Animatronics. As beings forged entirely of agony, these entities possess a fluid and ethereal existence within the material world. They exhibit abilities such as teleportation, shape-shifting, inducing hallucinations, and inflicting gruesome torment on their victims. These demons of agony, as I prefer to classify them, also exhibit behaviors that deviate from conventional sentience, more so than the creatures of agony. For instance, the yellow rabbit's actions in Into the Pit are unsettlingly peculiar. After kidnapping Oswald's father, it impersonates him, performing familial duties such as driving Oswald to school and preparing meals, despite the fact that he wants to kill him. Strangely, those around them also perceive the yellow rabbit as Oswald's father, despite its clear and monstrous nature to the boy. But this behavior becomes more comprehensible when understood in the context of the yellow rabbit's origins. It is a manifestation of the agony tied to the missing children's incident. The pain of the murdered children, the grief of their families, and the terror surrounding a monster concealed within a yellow rabbit costume. This traumatic amalgamation fuels the yellow rabbit's existence, driving it to mimic the role of a father, the same role William Afton took as his guise to hide himself, akin to a wolf in sheep's clothing. Similarly, another demon of agony, Eleanor, a parallel character to Circus Baby, manipulates and causes suffering because of Elizabeth Afton's desire to gain her father's approval. Even after William Afton's demise, Eleanor's actions are driven by a compulsive need to inflict widespread pain with no grand master plan, just evil for the sake of evil. The last aspect to consider about agony is its physical manifestation and its effects on objects and beings. Where Remnant typically appears as a silvery, mercury-like liquid associated with preservation and healing, agony is most commonly described as a black, viscous substance resembling oil mixed with blood. However, agony's touch is far deadlier than that of Remnant. In the Fazbear Fright series, the Stitchery demonstrates this deadly power. By touching a living creature, human or animal, it can instantly kill someone through an influx of agony. Victims of this horrific attack are left with pale skin, rotted eyes, and leaking black fluid, possibly residual agony left behind after their demise. Unlike Remnant, which can heal and restore, agony causes destruction and harm, the clear inverse of Remnant's restorative properties. Agony results in rot, stagnation, and decay, leaving an unmistakable mark on its surroundings. Consider the first Freddy Fazbear's pizzeria we were introduced to. The original animatronics leaked the same black liquid from their eyes and mouths. The walls were streaked with stains, the technology malfunctioned, and the entire establishment was visibly falling apart. This decay was not just physical, but symbolic of the corruption and suffering rooted in the location. A more striking example is Freddy Fazbear's Pizza Place, specifically its incarnation as the underground remains of security breach. While the souls of most of William's victims may have been released, the blob, fused with the lingering pain and agony of the past, remains a grim reminder of the suffering tied to the location. The mimic's wrath added to this lingering darkness, leaving an impression so profound that the cavernous expanse beneath the pizza place is otherworldly. After all, even if Fazbear Entertainment brought down the pizza place to cover up the incident, which doesn't make sense because honestly they shouldn't be able to cover up as big of a massacre as that was up, this doesn't explain the cavernous expanse below it. Like, the existence of such a negative presence is strong enough that it slowly rots the entire world around it, like a black hole consuming all light. While I can't provide definitive proof, I have long theorized that the mimic degrades everything it inhabits, necessitating its frequent need for new vessels. Consider the trail of destruction tied to the mimic's influence. Glitch Trap, Vanessa, Gregory, Cassie, the Glamrock animatronics, Tiger Rock, Nexie, and more all serve as vessels or manifestations of the mimic. In addition, Fazbear Entertainment repeatedly dismantled technology tied to the Mimic, the Storyteller Tree, the VR booth, and the Buddytronic Boutique were all taken offline in response to problems stemming from its interference. I believe that this pattern suggests that the Mimic may not switch hosts out of mimicry alone, but out of necessity. The agony that fuels it could actively corrode and decay its host, forcing it to move on to others to survive. Again, I have no way to definitively prove this, but it's fascinating to consider how deeply agony and its corruptive influence intertwine with the Mimic's nature. And if accurate, then could this degradation extend to the fabric of reality itself, thus explaining that cavern below the underbelly of the Pizzaplex? Into the Night will be right back after these messages. One of the most intriguing, often unsung praises of Finance of Freddy's is how Remnant and Agony, despite being more modern additions to the series lore, are thematic extensions found in the roots of original Scott Cawthon created games. These concepts expand upon the core ideas established during the golden age of the franchise, particularly Michael Apted's character arc for FNAF 4 through Pizzeria Simulator, and at the heart of this narrative, an often overlooked theme of duality, a reflection that emerges most poignantly through the parallels between Michael Apted and his father William. To understand the symbolic duality, one must examine the contrast and parallels between these two characters. Both Michael and William are represented by purple, yet this color carries different meanings for each. Michael Apted, his purple, decayed appearance reflects his physical monstrosity, a man who literally wears his sins for all to see. He is physically dead, but despite this, the white pinpricks of light in his eyes signify the humanity and soul that still resides within him despite being literally empty inside. William Apted, conversely, his purple representation symbolizes a metaphorical monstrosity, a man hiding his true self in the shadows, the white irises behind his gaze, suggesting instead a chilling emptiness with only the barest remnant of humanity within. Michael is literally hollow, his undead state a constant reminder of his guilt and its transformation into a man driven by sacrifice and redemption. William is metaphorically hollow, his sociopathic pursuit of power and conquest over death leaving him devoid of empathy or humanity. Both characters are defined by their connection to death of a child, which serves as the catalyst of their respective arcs. William, his deliberate murders, specifically that of Charlie starting off, fuel his megalomaniacal obsession with conquering death and expending death onto others. Michael, his accidental role in his brother's death, fundamentally changes him, setting him on a redemptive path where he ultimately sacrifices himself for another, his sister, Elizabeth. While much of the FNAF community focuses on literal interpretation of the series' lore, the artistic elements and symbolic storytelling deserve equal recognition. The interplay between Michael and William Apted and the thematic layers embedded within concepts like Remnant and Agony elevate the franchise beyond its horror origins into a narrative rich with themes of guilt, redemption, and the destructive consequences of unchecked ambition. By exploring these elements, FNAF transforms its supernatural framework into a deeply human story, a tale of fathers and sons, mistakes and sacrifices, and the eternal battle between light and darkness. The symbolic duality between Michael and William extends beyond their overarching arcs and weaves into the finer details of the series. Both Michael and William assume the role of night guards under fake names, concealing their true identities while navigating their respective goals. For William, it is a calculated guise. For Michael, it is a path of atonement and discovery. William's appreciation for the performing arts, as revealed in the Silver Eyes novels, contrasts with Michael's love for traditional illustrations seen in the survival logbook. This artistic interest further ties the two characters together, emphasizing their duality as individuals who share similar traits yet express them in radically different ways. Hell, both Michael and William are even voiced by the same actor, subtly reinforcing their connection as mirror images of each other. Yet despite their sheer traits, William and Michael are defined by their opposites. William Afton is a Machiavellian sociopath. His intellect and charisma are only matched by his ego, pride, and lack of empathy. He is a man who exploits others, driven by an unyielding desire for power, control, and unearned prestige. In contrast, Michael is depicted as sympathetic and rather simple. His sarcastic remarks and boyish doodles in the survival logbook reveal a lingering, childlike, innocent nature. An innocence he never fully outgrew despite his monstrous appearance and tragic circumstances. This contrast reinforces the theme of duality, as Michael's humanity and humility serves as a counterbalance to William's depravity and arrogance. And I think this adds the needed spice to one of the most poetic elements of FNAF storytelling, in how perspective shapes understanding. As Scott himself once said, "What's seen in the shadows is easily misunderstood in the eyes of a child." This idea reflects the broader theme of duality, where what lies beneath the surface often contradicts appearances. Michael, despite his monstrous form, harbors a soul full of regret and love. William, hidden in the shadows, reveals himself as the true monster, shrouded in layers of deception and malice, despite being seen by all as a man of business acumen and traditional ideals. This theme of duality, one thing being two but forming as a whole, is central to all four FNAF games in the Afton family arc. It is such a fascinating element that hits into the moral message of FNAF that I believe it gets lost in the obsession of lore and predicting what comes next. In FNAF 4, this duality is most evident in the contrast between nightmares and reality. The nightmare sequence represents a hellish torment where trusted friends of the crying child transform into predatory monsters, reflecting a real-world reality he lives in, of familial neglect and abuse. The child's supposed sanctuary, his home or bedroom, is a hostile prison, an emotional parallel to the horror that haunts his dreams. The later retcons actually continue and deepen this theme by revealing the nightmares as experiments orchestrated by William Afton as a way to torment his own son. This dynamic shifts when Michael Afton is subjected to the same dreams during his time in FNAF 1. The roles are reversed, with Michael, once a source of fear for his younger brother, now becoming the prey of vengeful souls. It's a bit ironic how those souls wear the same mask that he once wore when he was a bully. Sister Location takes this concept further, exploring the deceptive nature of appearances and identity. Michael Afton's introduction to the lore plays on the audience's assumptions because it initially leads the player on to believe he is William Afton, even as clues such as his name blatantly on the hand unit tablet we see every single night. The narrative expertly leads you astray. He is both a reflection of his father and his opposite, and Circus Baby herself embodies another layer of this duality, being both Elizabeth Afton and a creation of William's twisted ambition. Her sympathetic demeanor masks her sociopathic nature, mirroring the deception at the heart of William Afton's charm. Nothing is as it seems. Is Circus Baby a machine of death? A little girl scared and lost? Or both? In Freddy Fazbear Pizzeria Simulator, these themes become their most pronounced. The pizzeria, presented as a simple business revival of the Fazbear brand, is revealed to be a trap designed to end William Afton's legacy. the salvaged animatronics serve a dual narrative purpose as well, representing both the physical remnants of William's monstrous creations and, in the meta-narrative, the broken family he destroyed through his actions. Even Michael's role in the story reflects his natural conclusion as a parallel to his father's storyline. While William sought eternal life at the expense of others, Michael used his unnatural longevity to sacrifice himself for a greater good. Ultimate Custom Night brings this theme into its culmination. Trapped in a purgatory of his own making, William Afton faces eternal torment orchestrated by Golden Freddy, also known as the one you should not have killed. This endless cycle of suffering mirrors the nightmares that Michael endured in FNAF 4, turning William's punishment into poetic justice. Golden Freddy's wrath serves as both a vengeance and a lesson, forcing William to experience the pain he inflicted on others. Michael Afton's story during the golden age of Five Nights at Freddy's is, in essence, the story of FNAF itself. While Michael is not a vocal protagonist, his actions speak volumes, painting the picture of a man driven by a profound need for redemption. Kind of reminds me of tales like the original Star Wars trilogy, though with critical divergences, where Darth Vader's arc shows that even the vilest can find the light. Michael's journey emphasizes purpose, self-redemption, and doing what only you can do. Before Sister Location, Mike existed as a hollow figure, even before he became literally hollow. He is a puppet of his father, a man broken by his past, by the weight of what he has done, and the shadow of what his family has become. Yet in Sister Location, Michael takes the first step toward change through an act of profound self-sacrifice. He basically offers himself to save his sister, Elizabeth, who remains trapped within the confines of Circus Babies and the underground facility. This act of surrender, intended to free her, ironically grants Michael a form of immortality, the very immortality William sought but could never truly grasp. William's pursuit of eternal life led him to the discovery of Remnant, the mysterious force that allows life to persist beyond death. But William never understood its true essence. Purity of intent. His hubris and greed blinded him to the reality that immortality does not come from greed and self-serving behavior. William could never willingly give his own life for another. Michael, in stark contrast, did so without hesitation, proving himself to be the antithesis of his father's pride and cruelty, thus deserving of that immortality. And when Michael is resurrected, he realizes the bitter truth. His sacrifice, though noble, has been twisted into another cog in William's sinister design. After all, he let the Funtime animatronics out of their cages. Yet this revelation only strengthens his resolve. Michael is the only one who truly understands the depth of his father's actions and the consequences of his creations. He takes it upon himself to stop William and undo the damage caused, dedicating his second chance at life to bringing peace to a world scarred by his father's actions. This contrast between William and Michael Afton is mirrored in the dual nature of Remnant and Agony. Remnant, when abused, becomes a catalyst for suffering and pain, amplifying grief. But in its purest form, Remnant can heal, restore, and bring closure. Michael embodies this healing potential, proving that even something as tainted as he believes himself to be can be a force for good through a change of self and a stoic heart. As the series evolves and introduces new threats like the Mimic, fueled by the agony of its creator's loss, the narrative still hinges on this fundamental idea. The non-kidding ending of Ruin, I believe, teases this symbolic connection. The Mimic, a creature driven by agony, is destroyed by the scooper, the same machine that granted Michael his transformative immortality through Remnant. How ironic. A being of agony dies the same way an agent of Remnant was born. Michael's character resonates deeply with fans because he represents an eternal truth. No one is beyond redemption. His story is one of perseverance, of rising above one's past to do great things for the sake of others. It's why so many hope that Glamrock Freddy might ultimately be revealed as Michael Afton's soul, carrying on his legacy of selflessness and hope. Michael's journey is a testament to the belief that even in a world riddled with darkness, one person's choices can create ripples of goodness that endure for generations. Through the mythology of Remnant and Agony, Scott Cawthon has crafted a building block for not just future stories to be told, but for his entire world that cements in it timeless tropes of good versus evil. These ideas endure across countless stories beyond Five Nights because they reflect fundamental truths about the human condition. That redemption is always possible, and that sacrifice for the greater good is the ultimate form of heroism. And if you have thoughts about what we discussed today, whether you agree or disagree, or have your own unique perspective on Michael Afton's journey or the themes of Remnant and Agony, I'd love to hear from you. For those of you listening on Spotify, feel free to leave a comment below. And if you're tuning in via Apple Podcasts, Audible, or YouTube, you can reach out by sending an email to officialintothenightpodcastquestions@gmail.com. You'll also find that email in the episode description. And with all that said, I think that brings us to a good stopping point for tonight's episode. As always, I have been your host, Nick Black, and I would like to thank all of you once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.